'Tis the season for festive football, and the best way to watch it, down your local Green King Sports Pub. Of course, Christmas is all about having a drink, having a catch up with your friends and family. So make sure you get down to a Green King Sport Pub where you can have refreshing pints, delicious food, and of course, every football game that's showed live on telly.
Every fixture from TNT, Sky and Amazon is live at every Green King Sport venue. That means wall-to-wall action on their huge HD screens. Head to your local Green King pub and watch every winning goal, top bins volley or dodgy VAR decision in an atmosphere worth sharing.
And the best thing about it all is, if you download the Green King Sports app, you'll receive 10% off your drinks every time the sport on the telly. Hello and welcome back to the Talking Wolves podcast. I'm your host, Matt Cooper, and today I'm joined alongside Dave Azzopardi. Dave, how's things? A wonderful week of football last week. Unfortunately, both games involved Wolves.
No, it's all good, thank you. Had a bit of a lazy day today. All this weekend, I've been just shattered, man. All week, actually. Like 3 days I've got back from work or during the day. I've had a nap. I don't know what's going on.
Because you're burning the candle at both ends, mate. That's what it is.
Yeah, must
you're
be
going. Right. You're going out every weekend. You're not used to it. You always know when you've gone out because I'll see a tweet.
I'll
wake up about seven or eight on the weekend, and I'll see like Dave put a tweet out like 3 hours ago, and it'll be something Gary O'Neill related.
You know what? I was only meant to go. I wasn't even going to go out. I was going to actually, believe it or not, I was going to start the gym on Saturday night. So I had the match. I was going to start at the gym, and I finished editing the fan drafts. I was like, nah, I can't. I ain't got the motivation. Then my mate messaged, do you want to go to Weatherspoons? Just to Weatherspoons, and then we'll go home. And it gets to like 1 a.m. We're getting kicked out. I was like, right, where are we going now? So I ended up staying out till about 3:30 in the end again.
That single life, mate.
Yeah, not good. Well, then I thought, all right, I'll be quiet the rest of Christmas, up till Christmas. But I mean, London next weekend, out Christmas Eve as well. So, yeah.
I think I might come for a couple of beers Christmas Eve.
I think we're staying to after the game, so.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Mr. Russell, how are you doing? No game for you on Saturday. You went to Crystal Maze, didn't you?
Yeah. So, yeah, no game on Saturday. But I had a bit of a wild one. So, I was at my Christmas party in Copenhagen on Friday night.
How about that? Yeah.
So, I flew in on Thursday and then had my Christmas party. I left the party around about 1:15 in the morning locally. Walked back to the hotel. It was about a 30-minute walk via McDonald's. Yeah, via McDonald's. Got into my hotel at 1:45 and then my alarm went off at 4:15 in the morning, Saturday morning.
No.
Yeah, and then I flew directly from basically Copenhagen to Manchester to then do the Crystal Maze. So I was fucked. So not the best.
You should have picked one or the other, mate, if I'm honest.
Well, yeah. I mean, Crystal Maze has been booked since last Christmas, to be fair. And I was keen when it's a new company and stuff, so I thought, it'd be all good. And then I literally woke up, started walking from my hotel to like the metro. There's 24 hours to get to the airport. It's in about 10 minutes. I walked halfway and had to turn back around to the hotel and just go to the toilet for 15 minutes because I was just like, this isn't good. I thought there's no way I'm getting on this metro and not throwing up. So, Yeah. Man, so literally, it was one of them, mate. Yeah, I got on the flight. I sat in the airport and everything I just wasn't talking. I don't know what I was doing. Everything seemed to be going past me and I was just not in a good place. And then I got on the flight and it was only like a third full. So I had like a row to myself, which was good. So I just lay down, fell a kip. But it was just full of like Danish Man United fans. And little did they know they were going to get spanked by a little old Bournemouth. So that was quite fun. See the result afterwards and thinking they've got to fly back to Copenhagen after that.
Have you ever been on a flight with someone famous or like sat on the same row as someone famous on a plane? I'd imagine George, you've done a lot of traveling, so
So I've been on a flight with someone famous, but I didn't sit next to him, but someone from my work sat next to them. And it was someone, it was someone from The Boys.
Oh yeah.
What's he called? It's the Israeli guy from The Boys. Plays for, he's French, Frenchy.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So he's flying back from Heathrow.
You know what though? If French, if he walked past me, I don't think I'd recognize. I don't think I'd clock it to him. To be fair, I think he's he's a good character, but probably one of the most like unrecognizable people in there. To be fair.
And I've been on a train back from the NFL in first class. This was with it was with Johnny and Raoul a few years ago, wow. And their partners.
Ain't no Ray for me on the tube. If you're gonna get, if you're gonna talk tubes and trains, Dave, have you ever been on a flight with someone famous?
Trying to think, probably pop up like, not obviously not me, but my mom sat next to David Hasselhoff on a flight before.
No,
yeah.
That was your dad.
No. So they were going to Berlin, and my mom and dad, I think they're in first or business class or something. And my dad, they put my mom and dad on separate rows. And my mom was like, nah, like, I'm not having this. Like, my dad is like, well, just get on the flight and we'll see what happens. And some guy sat next to her. And she kept texting my dad. I said, I'm sure this looks like David Hasselhoff. Like, I'm sure. And then, I don't know what triggered it, but it was. So she got a picture of him. But apparently, like, he was sound, but literally just spoke about himself the whole entire flight. Like, so.
Yeah,
there is a picture somewhere. I think there's a picture framed in my house, like taking the mic.
I'd be reckon your dad was like keeping a keen eye, thinking he'd be able to on him. My missus, because your mum's quite a looker, isn't she? So, when I flew back from Vegas last year, the row behind me, and Jordan will probably know better than Dave, was Joe Calzaghe and Darren Barker.
Oh, nice.
And then Odialadipo was like, he just talks sport and whatnot. He was like to the left as well. But Joe Calzaghe looked like he'd not been to bed for 4 days.
It was one. This is like proper Zedley. Aiden Flint was on one of my flights a couple of years ago.
Oh, James McLean was on it as well, and the whole Wigan squad. I forgot about that. No, Rotherham. Was he at Rotherham? Or Wigan?
Was that Wigan as well?
Wigan. Who's it? I don't think he was at Rotherham.
They were in our hotel as well. They'd just won promotion a couple of seasons ago. I think it was Wigan. Yeah, they were all there. But we've got to talk about football, unfortunately, lads. I don't particularly want to. I want to try and combine the two games into one because that's how I kind of felt like I'd watched it. Start with the Burnley game. I probably thought it was a better performance from the Forest game purely because of the result, but Sarabia in from the start, Dave. We did say he'd get game time, especially over the festive period, just because of the amount of fixtures there are.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he started both games, didn't he? And I thought, I felt with how these two teams started as well, it probably made, or how we imagined they would set up away from home, it sort of made sense. We knew we'd have a lot more of the ball. We knew that, you know, we're probably not going to be able to catch, you know, it's not going to be a counter-attacking performance. I felt in some ways the way that both teams set up in Burnley and Forest, I don't think either of them set up negatively as such.
No.
But it's one thing for Wolves. I'm sure I read a stat. I don't know it off the top of my head, but in terms of when we have a lot more of the ball, I think Wolves do, especially under Gary O'Neill, are struggling to find that sort of bite to really just kill off the games. But Burnley game was okay. I was sort of disappointed with how flat it was. There were some certain people in the comment section on the reactions and the fans react saying that, you know, it was a good, almost tactical battle. We knew how Burnley were going to come and set up, made life difficult for us, and we got the 3 points, which is fair enough. And I suppose, you know, our form against Burnley historically has been awful. So obviously it was good to get that off our backs as well. So, I didn't get home on Tuesday night or go to work Wednesday morning so excited and so happy we won, but you know, 3 points, scored another goal, kept a clean sheet and extended our unbeaten run at home.
I think both games, George, but I was watching it thinking these are two poor sides, as in Wolves were poor against Burnley and Burnley were and Forest were against Wolves and Wolves were, so essentially three poor sides. But I saw Semedo coming for a little bit of a stick for the Burnley game, but I probably thought he was the best player on the pitch, to be honest.
I thought he had a decent game, yeah. I think I think it's because Koleosho looked quite lively, didn't he? Like for that first sort of 15 minutes or so. And he'd scored two goals, I think, against Sheffield United. And I think he might have even got an assist as well. And I quite liked him when I saw him, when I've seen Koleosho. Yeah, I think he looks bright. And I don't think Semedo had a bad game against him at all. I thought Semedo looked after him quite well, you know, and unfortunately probably for the game, or definitely for Burnley, that he went off injured, and it seems like he's probably out for the season now as well, which is a shame, really. But no, I just think it's one of those things, really. Like Semedo gets beaten with a shitty stick because his attacking output probably isn't what. Well, his attacking output isn't what Doherty's was 3-4 years ago, and he's always been hit with that stick. You know, with selling for like £37 million, you'd expect more. And the only reason for that is if Wolves are spending £37 million on any sort of player, they need to be like levels above, like, you know, it was a lot of money, but we knew that at the time. And I just think he's getting tarnished with the price tag. But as I've said before, like, it's Mendes money, it means fuck all. Like, you know, you get Semedo for 37, Fabio for 35, then you get Moutinho for 5. It's the trade off, isn't it? You got Jota for 12, and it's just like it doesn't really matter, really. It's just you're on that merry-go-round, and you pay what Mendes tells you you got to pay. And you're going to win some and you're going to lose some. But yeah, I just think he's an easy target to get stick for. And other than, you know, I feel like he could add a few more attacking contributions to his game. I don't really feel like he lets us ever down, really.
Do you know what I think it is? And the problem in all of this, and I'm going to say it and you're going to think, what? Adama Traore, because every time now a player in a wide area gets the ball, and Semedo, if you're watching, he looks after the ball really well. He never loses it. He may go backwards, but every time we get a player in a wide position now, for some reason, fans just expect him to beat the man every single time, even on the left-hand side, even with the wingers. And sometimes that's not the case. And I think we've been spoiled with Adama, because every time he got the ball, he would try it. And they obviously see similarities with Semedo, but he's not that type of player. No. I mean, don't get me wrong, with his legs, he can get. I mean, he went past Charlie Taylor well, but I don't think that's his role.
No, it's not. And that's the same reason, you know, obviously we've still got Neto, who does that when he's fit as well for us, that he'll just get the ball and run and beat a man. And you are right, Matt. I think it's like Sarabia's had a lot of stick in terms of people think he's shit, and the reality is, like, he's not shit. He's just, he hasn't got blistering pace. And I think there's just too many people, like you say, have been spoilt by watching Wolves have these sort of, you know, direct, very fast wingers and beat men for fun. That if you can't do that, you shit automatically. But there's also, for me as well, a bit of the FIFA generation, that anyone who ain't got a sprint speed past 85 ain't a good footballer. But it's true, though. Everyone wants to do everything at 100 mile an hour, and it's not about that. And Sarabia shown, I thought, in both games, He's class for the Burnley goal and the Forest goal.
Even that little turn away he did with Charlie Taylor, like, you don't need blistering pace. He's just clever. But I thought that, I know I said Semedo played well, but I thought Sarabia was probably the cut above anyone else on the pitch against Burnley. Not so much against Forest, but just pops up in the right areas. And just because he doesn't go past the man, like you said, Jordy, he sees things, and he was good for the goal. He was great for the goal against Forest as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think you raise a good point against Semedo. I thought that the midfield struggled a little bit with Sanderberg, especially driving forward. I've always liked Sanderberg. I think he's a good footballer. Shouldn't be that good with the ball at his feet, that size. But I think we miss. You know, I said last week that, or the week before, that we need a midfielder, but I don't know what. I almost feel like that kind of profile, Dave, where, yeah, good on the ball, but can also just drive with it and can carry players on his back. And we haven't got that person.
That is the midfielder. Not necessarily Sanderberg, but someone that will get the ball. And I felt at Forest game especially, get that ball and drive it forward. Think, right, I'm going to get this ball up the pitch 20 yards and lay it off to somebody in a better position. Exactly. But I think the Forest game especially was like, I think Semedo has almost been instructed to play sort of a lot further up almost, and a bit more of a double pivot between him and João Gomes. So Semedo was like taking up a lot more of the position on the right hand side, almost as Sarabia was drifting in field. And then that at times that restricted the passing of the back three and the back five in general really struggled to play forward passes. And I felt Totti and Hugo Bueno really, really struggled with the lack of options there. So I think Gary O'Neill made comments about the players being tired on Tuesday. And then obviously I think he made comments about it again on Saturday. But at the end of the day, I think he said it on Friday in the pre-match, I want them to give a big performance today because we've got 8 days rest after that. And we just didn't see it. It was a tired performance against Forest. But I do agree. I think somebody in that midfield there that could drive the ball forward. And that's no disrespect to the Lamina and João Gomes at the moment, because I think Lamina could do that. But
he was doing more of it against Sheffield fucking Forest.
Yeah, yeah. I felt like Spurs, he could do it as well. But then we've seen Boubacar do it. But obviously, I think in terms of quality on the ball, he's probably not as comfortable on the ball as someone like Sander Berge would be. But yeah, I think that's... I don't think that would be a priority for Wolves in January, but that's definitely something to maybe consider going into the summer.
Well, if you believe the rumours about Josh Brownhill, then they're obviously looking to address it. I know, Joe, that they've courted him for quite some time. I like him, I do. He's got good delivery as well. Good from set pieces and threat from outside the box. But again, isn't he a bit samey to Tommy Doyle? He's definitely more athletic and puts himself about, but is it... I don't know. Like, for me, he doesn't scream like... And the price is good, but good. We've got a different profile now.
Yeah, I think... I mean, I've been a big fan of him as well. I think I said in the summer I'd have quite liked him. And yeah, look, I do feel like you probably have addressed that a little bit with Tommy Doyle. I think Tommy Doyle might be technically better than Josh Brownhill, but I think Josh Brownhill will get around the pitch a bit better than Tommy Doyle would. And like you say, it's a good fee that's been spoken about, but it's one, like you say, it's a very similar profile to what we've already got. And do you need another midfielder to do that sort of job? I mean, the obvious one, like you said, where we've got that midfielder who could drive with the ball like that was Matheus Nunes when we had him. But we used to play him out wide because we just didn't trust him in a midfield two. And it's that sort of profile we're after, to be able to take us 30, 40 yards up the pitch. In January, they will do good business. I've got every faith that they will go and get players. I think we know that they're going to be active in the market again from what we've heard and what we've been told, that they'll get a couple in. I just, like you say, they've got to be different players rather than similar profile, because we don't need to stockpile centre midfielders for the sake of it.
Do you not think someone like Bellegarde could play that role, though? I mean, he could, but...
Potentially, but I don't think he's physical enough to play it. Not in a two, three, yeah, but...
Restricted a little bit by the formation as well at the moment.
Definitely. And I think that's what Tom fell victim of on Saturday. We could probably do with someone with a bit more incisiveness against Forest. But
I agree.
The fact that they're midfield free and that, like, their team was like Land of the Giants in it, they're a big side. And that's probably why Tommy Doyle didn't come on. So I think he's probably still looking for that athleticism in the middle of the park.
I would have brought, for the Forest game, I would have brought Tommy Doyle on towards the end. I thought, obviously, Lamina was an enforced change. He had to come off anyway. I felt the Sasha change was possibly the wrong one, but it was too late anyway. I know I'll beat this drum again, but I would have brought Fabio on. I genuinely would have. I felt the lack of energy from the front line was, like, frustrating, like really, really frustrating. I feel like Fabio, even if he just sacrifices or pulls away a defender just to create a bit more space, and then Tommy Doyle I would have brought on for João Gomes, because that was just screaming out for someone to pick out a pass. The set pieces, again, were woeful, both games, absolutely woeful. And you just need to... Every time I see Tommy Doyle, I know he's not scored a free kick or whatever yet, but he just... Wide free kicks or the corners just seem to be in the right position. In fact, we can't even get it past the first man at the moment still. And that's not just Bellegarde, that was Sarabia as well. It's just frustrating to watch, really frustrating.
I was saying this on Tuesday night, though, watching it. I was fortunate to be with the Sevlo boys. But we were saying in there, like, it's at the point now where it's got to be a tactic to keep going for the front post, because the Premier League, the professional footballers, like, it's not just like the odd one will try and hit the post. every single one. And the one time against Burnley, I think it worked, is when it sort of got it got flicked on. Then Dawson was at the back post, and it was like a shot cross, wasn't it? And I feel like that might be the tactic that they're actually trying to do to almost get to win the second ball, almost get a flick on, and then just cause chaos at the back post. But you know, we've got some big blokes. I don't think we need to be that intricate with the corners in terms of just trying to like try something.
How dominant Kilman and Dawson are in the air at times, and then you add Totti into that mix
as well. I just feel like put it in a good area and just
attack. I'll keep going proper. You does like just hit the penalty spot, just get it. Yeah, aim for the penalty spot. And just
I'd honestly play it short. Create a better angle for yourself, because then there's less error for room for margin. Trying to whip a ball in from a dead ball, use the pace on the ball. Even if you just play it to Sarabia and he whips one in, and outswinger, use the pace on the ball then, because you very rarely score direct from a corner anyway. It's always a flick, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if you change the positions around the opposition, then that's what I did. I thought Burnley were at the short corner as well. They brought like three or four players over.
People a bit on the edge as well, weren't they?
Yeah, and I noticed that Josh Brownell said when they took the corner, he kept saying, be patient, don't force it, be patient. And they were, and they created some good openings. So let's talk about the goal against Burnley, though. Pretty well taken goal in the end. Pressed high up the pitch. Sarabia with a little cute touch infield, and another Cunha assist, and then another Huang goal. But Dave, composure in the box, took his opportunity very well. Just ice cold.
That's a player with confidence and in good form. I think Huang of 12 months ago would have lashed at that and tried to hit it first time. But I think there was almost, you're talking about obviously Burnley being patient. I think Wolves had to be quite patient because it wasn't a classic up till that point, and it was just waiting for that right moment and the right moment to trigger the press. And that's what Wolves did, caught Burnley, you know, lacking. And all three, that's the front three, that's what you need them to do, combine a lot more. Sarabia to Cunha. Cunha is now starting to find his feet really, really well in the Premier League, not just both, you know, with goals and assists now. And like you say, Huang, really good composure and a nice finish as well, past Trafford. But, you know, sometimes in those sort of games, I don't think Burnley offered a huge amount more other than that. I felt the longer the game went on without a score in a second, I felt this could be like vintage 2016 Wolves and we're going to concede last minute here or whatever. But, you know, we got the job done in the end.
You say that about Cunha, who started adding goals and assists, but I thought the last two games he's been crap.
I think Huang has, though, as well. I think
he has, yeah.
Very poor, yeah.
I think probably Sarabia has been the best out
I think
three.
In terms of Cunha, I think what I've not seen him do enough of, or a lot of the last few games, not just the last two, but the last few weeks, is, you know, the first four or five games of the season where he's picking up the ball and just driving it forward, like, you know, and beating every man. Not really seen him do that enough.
I think that's part design, though. I think Gary O'Neill said, like, we need him to be further up the pitch. So,
But then you say that, and he'd be coming deep quite a lot. But for me, I think he's quick enough to try and... There were opportunities against Burnley where I would have played it in behind, but no one was making the correct runs. So I don't know if that's a player instruction or whether it's just, like we were talking about earlier, fatigue. But there were opportunities there to try and get in behind, and we didn't take them.
I think with the Burnley game, though, it was just a very poor game. But the only kind of glimmer of quality in the game stood shown and we scored. But George, I was expecting a reaction against Forest, if I'm totally honest, mate. Saw back in. I thought Bentley did well against Burnley, kept us in the game. That double save was tremendous. But I just expected more, and if anything, we got less. Yes, I know the players are tired, but if that is the case, I think that's a very clear message that Gary O'Neill doesn't trust any of the other players on the bench, apart from maybe one or two.
Yeah, I think the worst thing that could have happened before that game happened, where Forest got smashed 5-0, and it almost rejuvenated their players to try and put in a performance with Steve Cooper, who they quite obviously clearly like as a group of players. And again, I know people will mock Steve Cooper for a lot of things, but I actually think he's a decent coach, to be honest with you.
Best looking Cooper. Well,
he ain't going to win any birds on Take Me Out, but, you know, we'll stick to his footballing ability. So first of all, that for sure, I feel like that was probably the worst thing that could have happened, because Forest, you know, they come with a bit of steel and determination and grit, and I think they were well worth the point, to be honest with you. And then, yeah, like, look, I think it's quite clear. Like, we've spoke about it a few times on the on here now. Like, he clearly doesn't fancy Sasa because he doesn't know what to do with him.
No.
First of all, number two is as well. I feel like Fabio Silva's got more chance of playing for Wumben Pulbar on a Sunday than he has playing for Wolves again. Come January, I just think he's just on the bench because he's on the bench to fill a spot. Yeah, it's quite clearly he doesn't trust a few of them, or doesn't rate a few of them, and I feel like as well he's brought some players. He's going to be bringing some players in. There'll definitely be some shipping some out as well. And I know that people will moan about what's happened in, you know, out of those two games, and the performances haven't been fantastic. But I don't feel like 4 points is a bad return. I feel like there's a lot of overreaction on social media at the moment about sort of where we are as a club and what we can do. And I feel like we've had some good performances. We've had some good results against some of the bigger sides in the league, should I say. And there's almost a bit of a clamour now. Like, why can't we finish eighth? Why can't we get one of those Europa League conference places? And you know what? Why not? It's true. Why not? But I feel like if you factor in what happened at the start of the season, where we all were, where the panic was, and sort of, you know what, take 17th, it could be a real long season. I just feel like you need to give a bit of balance. And on paper, yeah, we should be getting 6 points, but I don't think 4 points is the bad return. It's another two unbeaten at home, keeps that run going, and it's just okay. It's okay. And I feel like, you know, the players are tired, but Gary O'Neill can't keep using this as an excuse come January, where he's got the chance and the ability to change it and rectify that for it, to get players in that he fancies and he wants to bring.
I don't think he can still keep using it now, to be honest. So he's got players on the bench.
Not like, next week.
No. I said 6 points because of both the opponent. These are probably the first two games we've had at home where we're expected to win. And I expected us to win. However, if we'd have said, this is how you're going to play, absolutely stink the gaff out and still get 4 points and I snapped your hand off. But I'm not happy with that still. I think the last two performances have been slightly concerning. And that's not me saying like Wolves are going to go down. But I just don't... It doesn't feel sustainable. Like, I don't think we deserve 4 points. I think Forest were lucky not to beat us, to be honest. I think Burnley were lucky not to get a point.
I think Wolves have, and there's two parts to this. I think, like George, you were saying on social media, there was quite a bit of a reaction. There was somebody that had said, we're not going to get into Europe with performances like that. And people were saying, hold on, like, where was Europe in the situation? I've seen quite a few people, I don't know if they were parody accounts or whatever, saying that Gary O'Neill shouldn't be in charge or his time should be up or whatever, you know, whatever. But I think it was after the Burnley game, I think it was on TNT, where basically they asked him how he thought the season was going, and they were happy because the goal, and I think he pretty much made out, the goal from Fosun or Matt Hobbs or whatever was to stay in the Premier League. They just said to him, make sure this club's a Premier League club come the end of the season. So, you know, at the moment, we're more than exceeding that. But I think he surprised us with the level of performance or the results that we've been getting against your Man City's, against your Spurs. You know, that point against Villa now looks amazing. The point against Newcastle, you know, he has set himself a standard, especially at home with how we're playing. So, like you said, Matt, when it is two games that on paper are probably the first two real winnable games at home, it is frustrating. But going back to what you said, George, I think I said it on the review, I think if someone offered me 4 points and knowing that Gary O'Neill was concerned with fatigue and so on, I think I would have taken it.
I don't get this fatigue argument, though. Like, we use players off the bench then. Like, you can't...
Yeah, but in regard... The ones he was concerned about...
3 minutes to go.
The ones he was concerned about the most, though, were the front three. Mm-hmm. So, like, in terms of Hwang, who would you have replaced Hwang with, though?
Bellegarde?
Yeah, but then you got Saraba and Cunha there. But then... He obviously needs to start trusting. I mean, I just think Kalajdzic is the completely wrong option. Or you change formation. Or you put Semedo or Docker right wing.
Who else would you bring on?
I'm not even going to mention it. So.
Every game that we've like played poorly in, like they will say no cap, Fabio should have come on. But to be fair, like, I get it because he's a bit more.
The side eye one should have been. He should have come because he would just run across. He would have pulled defenders about.
We spoke about last week about Sasha and Fabio, but it's very clear to see that he doesn't fancy either of them. And I wouldn't be surprised if both of them moved on in January because we never play like a team that would play with Kalajdzic as the focal point. We just don't do it. And
but we haven't got the quality out wide. Again, going back to something I've said on there before, is to play with someone like Kolarčić, you need to put balls in the box early and sort of hit early crosses and just play around him and off him. I don't think we've got the quality from our fullbacks to play those sort of deliveries that you need to bring a big man into play. And it is more so the fullbacks than the inside forwards or wingers, because you want to hit him early if you're going to play him. And I don't feel like Semedo or Bueno have got the quality to do that, to play like these sort of early balls or early crosses into the box.
Bueno doesn't look fit, mate.
He looks miles off it. I don't know what's going on with him from last year, and to coin a Michael Richards phrase, burst onto the scene, like he did at Palace away. Like, I don't know if it's confidence, I don't know if it's fitness. He just doesn't look the same. Like even against Burnley, and again, I didn't see much of the Forest game, so I can only talk really about Burnley. Like, last year, he'd have got the ball and tried to do something with it. He'd have attacked the fullback, and he'd have tried to get a ball in the box. He doesn't even do that. He doesn't even look like he wants to even try. It's not. You can tell he's not even processing. I'm going to beat my man and put a ball in the box. He's like, I'll come inside. Yeah. It's just very safe. Yeah. And I feel like with Aiton Riou, dare I say it, because I know it hasn't really worked. Like, we probably should go back to a back four. Totti is left back.
I mean, Totti had a stinker against Forest, I thought, so did Bueno. And to be fair, Totti is normally fairly steady. I know, Dave, you love him, but having Aitnori on that left-hand side with Totti, like, Aitnori is very resistant to a press, looks after the ball, never loses it. Totti, he's a bit all over the place sometimes with the ball. When you have Bueno and Totti on that left-hand side, who are both the exact same at the minute, like a fucking hot potato between the pair of them. You know, it's at Forest after five or six minutes. They just targeted it. They just, that left-hand side, left-hand side, because they could see that neither of them could trap a bag of cement.
Yeah, I was really disappointed. I mean, I mentioned, what, 3 or 4 weeks ago, have I ever seen Totti Gomez have a bad league game for Wolves? I think the answer was yes now. Like, for
every time he faces a pass, I'm like, there you go, Dave.
Yeah. So, but I agree. The Bueno thing, I really hope it is just lack of sharpness and maybe lack of game time with the confidence, because he looks like, it's like, you know, that joke about like 2023 wingers, like run forward to 10 yards, turn around and pass it backwards. He doesn't want to try anything. I think I saw a graphic of our passing, the passing network, and that one between the left back and left wing back is huge. And all the three centre backs just there and the left back, left wing back to left centre back. But I think Totti was one of the reasons for the goal as well. I felt, it just looks so off it, like just so, like you said, hot potato, really struggled on the ball. And I think his first touch initially, I think the ball loops towards him and his first touch is awful.
It's a bit of a hospital pass from Bueno, to be fair.
It's not great. And then I think he's lucky not to have given away a foul as well, I think, Totti then. And then obviously Forest recycle the ball, and that's when the ball comes in. I've actually watched it back. There were a few people to me moaning about Sarr. But Semedo cannot get... How many times does he get beaten on that header behind him? It's like... The Brighton game last year, when he had a drop to 0 out of 10 and Mitoma was unbelievable, got sent off. Happened there once or twice. That is his weakness. That is his real, real weakness.
I think the thing is, though, there, like, you don't even have to win the ball. You just got to put yourself about. Because if you just jump with a defender and he doesn't make contact with the ball, you're going to give a foul. You've just got to make it difficult.
Two things is either his awareness is awful, or he's scared of taking a hit.
Tough tits, you've got to take one.
I know.
But the only thing I will say with that is, and I think it's more so his positioning that gets him in trouble with those sort of goals, because, I mean, if you stand still, or you're static and you're trying to win a header versus someone who's got a run on you, it doesn't matter if you're 3-4 inches taller, they're always going to win the ball. Like, they're always going to win the header. And I think Samaya is probably, 5'10"? He might just be about 6 foot. Like, if Harry Toffolo's bit small, I think, maybe. Yeah. Like, you know, like as soon as you get a run on someone, you've got no chance. It kills you.
You've got to be aware of that.
You have got to be aware of it, and that's the thing. You've either got to stay out of it a little bit so you can run onto the ball as well, because you just seem to get sucked in under it, or you've got to anticipate it quicker. Like you've got to just anticipate the ball's coming in, and you've got to change your body position, because as soon as he's jumping pretty much vertically up in the air, anything that's coming this way behind you is just going to come straight through the back of you. And like say you are going to get clattered, and maybe he's scared of getting clattered, but like he's not doing anything at the moment. It's just getting very easy to get beat.
You know, it's a blueprint, man.
Talking about hospital passes, I can't remember. It was definitely Cunha who like lobbed it back across the back line, and I can't remember. We obviously dealt with it, but there was a point where he'd lobbed it towards Semedo, and it just like it was an awful ball, and Forrest Fink pounced onto it. It was just little bits like it reminded me of. I don't know if you guys remember. I think it was. I think it was Torino in the Europa League when Jimenez did it.
Yeah.
Jimenez like volleyed it back towards goal, and then Patricio missed the ball completely. I'm like, oh my God, what are you doing?
Molyneux won it, that.
Yeah. But yeah, there was a pass, I was like flipping it. But it was just silly things like that. And I think we were quite fortunate to get our goal before half time. And that was that first bit of quality that we showed all game, because I think Forest would have made life so, so difficult in the second half. If we got into half time and they were still 1-0 up.
I know the Sarabia goal from an individual point of view against Spurs, probably the goal of the season, but I think that's our best goal of the season so far in terms of working a move. And it's just a clever run from Sarabia again.
Wallamina as well, I think.
Yeah, brilliant. But when I watched it in real time, I thought it was a lot closer. But I watched it back a couple of times and it's a threaded ball. He's not a couple of yards away from him. Well, it's a great finish as well from Cunha, but I just don't know why we just can't go on then and push on, because that was the only real chance we had. And Forest, they missed a couple of sitters back in the North Bank end. But again, through, like you said, they by careless mistakes, like Boubacar Traore, that header that they should have scored, it was a miss of the season. It's an absolute sitter. But you've got Boubacar on the one side getting muscled out of it, and then Doherty fucking around with it on the other side.
But yeah.
Like, if that goes in, you kick yourself. You kick yourself. And I think Forest can feel a bit hard done by. And everyone said they come and park the bus. They showed more threat than us.
I thought they were going to. I felt with what was on the line for Steve Cooper and the fact that they weren't attacking and they weren't playing on the front line. You could see that by Wolves' possession. But Wolves, the possession was just the back three and all the back five passing it to each other. We didn't. That was why the Lamina pass was the first time someone said, you know what, let me try something. And it worked. We didn't want to take any risks. It was so safe on Saturday. And that's what ultimately why we didn't get the 3 points. But like Forrest didn't park the bus. You know, if that's what you want to say, you could say we've parked the bus for 90% of our games because we do sit low and try and counterattack. And that's exactly how they played. And ultimately, like you said, had the better chances and probably with better forward players would have won that game.
So the last two games have been so one-dimensional, so passive, so predictable, so one-paced. And it's got to be better against West Ham on Sunday. But again, we're now playing a team who have just been thumped 5-0. And Dave, it's going to be a difficult task. It'd be a difficult task anyway, but even more so now. I'm just hoping that Ait Nouri's back or Neto's back and can play a bit of a role in it. I'm not sure what the status is with those guys, but
yeah, one of those two are a must. I think we missed both of them. Yeah, we missed both of them at the weekend. I think that West Ham Fulham result is probably going to be a bit of an anomaly for West Ham. You know, they beat Spurs last week. Although their fans aren't 100% happy with David Moyes, I still think he's done slightly better than what they were probably expecting. And it's going to be a difficult place to go. You know, they thumped us at their place last season. And we've not been fantastic away from home. So I'm hoping, you know, if we can get 3 points from this game, get something against Chelsea, because I do think they're going to have a reaction soon enough and it'll be sod's law against us. But again, if you could get 2 to 4 points from these next two games, remain unbeaten before Christmas, I think I'd be happy.
Yeah, I'm not too hopeful about Sunday, Jordan. I think the Chelsea game will probably win, but what are you thinking coming into this game?
I just think a point's a good point away from home, really. And I feel like they're a good side. I know the West Ham fans have a moan about David Moyes, but, I mean, he's done an unbelievable job for them. Unbelievable. And I feel like he gets a lot of stick or a lot of snobbery just because of the United job. And, you know, people taking the piss and memeing that. But I'm telling you now, I think if Man United would have stuck with David Moyes, they'd be in a far better position than what the club is now, put it like that, if they'd give him a bit more time. I think West Ham are a solid team. I think they've got good players. I've always liked Jared Bowen, even when he was at Hull. They've got Edson Álvarez. You know, Kudos is there now. They're just a solid team. I always feel like playing West Ham, you know what you're getting. They're going to be physical. They're going to be tough to break down. They're going to be resilient. And I think, you know, if we go over there and get a point, great. I think they're in Europe, aren't they, on Thursday as well. I'm not sure if they've got any permutations of whether they need to play a strong side or not. It'd be interesting, though, if they need to get anything from a European game on Thursday, then to play us on Sunday, we might get or be able to take opportunity on a bit of a hangover from them. But it'll be interesting as well and to see what sort of reception Craig Dawson gets, because I know they all fucking love him down there, don't they?
Yeah.
And he's due a goal. I say this most weeks, but he's due a goal, I'm telling you. So if you could go there and do it, happy days.
They've got Freiburg on Thursday at home. I think West Ham need to win that game to stay top. They're both on 12 points, but Freiburg have got a better goal.
They're both through anyway, aren't they?
Yeah, but you don't want to come second, do you?
No, you mean.
Yeah, no. Nice chance for you, Dave.
I was going to say, though, as well, with West Ham as well, I think Antonio might be out as well, and he's always someone that gives us kittens. So that might also help us a little bit. Don't tend to do well against these big, strong, physical strikers. So,
Paquetá's the one, mate.
Proper player.
Moving on to the questions, lads. We've actually had a question from another Wolves podcast this week, the 77 Club. They've asked, who would you say has the highest IQ in the current Wolves squad?
I think Kilman's got to be up there. Okay,
I think Cunha, because it was a bit like 5-6 languages.
Yeah, true.
I've met Craig Dawson in the Crown Plaza in Villamora, and he was quite, this was years ago, and he seemed like quite intelligent for football.
I think it's hard with like the foreign lads, because like you don't know really how they come across, if they do come across clever or whatever. But I think I think it's probably a good shout. I don't know. It's a hard question.
I think Kolasinac could be quite clever as well, from his interviews and stuff.
Well mannered.
Yeah. Jord?
I'll go with Wang, because he's now my best mate.
What's his name, right? Mate?
Because he wasn't my best mate, was he, last year? And now he's you know, I'm basically trying to get in his good books in case I ever meet him. I'll go, oh, remember what I said about you?
I'm glad it spurred you on, mate. Yeah.
Nothing but Neto has asked, does Gary O'Neill not trust Doyle? I thought Doyle would have been perfect in the last two games when we knew he'd have a lot of the ball. The fact that Doyle didn't even get a sub opportunity was surprising. I think we've covered this, haven't we? But I think he trusts him, but I just think what he lacks in physicality, he won't almost allow for that against teams like Burnley and Forest. But most teams in the league have got two big snotters in the middle. So where do you go from there?
I think Forest should have come on, and I think it could have made a difference if you gave him like 5 or 10 minutes. But the Burnley game, I think he did the right thing. He kept those physical players on in the midfield, and that's what had to happen. And we weren't necessarily chasing the game in that one. But the Forest game, I think all it needed was a cheap foul on the edge of the area, and then you got a proper, you know, or another corner, and you got a set piece specialist on there, really.
Jordan, any thoughts?
No, it's exactly the same. I think he trusts him. I think he thinks he's a good player, like we all do. But I feel like he'll benefit from a change in system. I feel like if we move from the back five into more sort of a 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3, you'll see the best of Tommy Doyle at that point rather than, you know, doing the job that Gomez and Lamina are doing. I'm not saying he can't do that job, but I just don't think he can do that shuttling job as well as those guys can.
Nick Morris has asked, my question is, why are some fans moaning? In the last two home games, we probably would have lost last season. It's 4 points out of six without our two best attacking players in Neto and Aitnouri. Keep the faith, guys. We're doing okay. Gary O'Neill, Barmy Army. Spoken like a true Dave has a party half for you.
I love that. Go on, Nick. Love that. No, I agree. I mean, you can moan. Not every single game is going to be unbelievable. Like I said earlier, neither game was a classic and I was frustrated with the performances, but you can't be calling for, you know, I think if you sit down and you look at what the stats and everything else, like Nick said there, we've got some key players missing. We're in a good position. If we can still get some points, you know, before the halfway point of the season, we'll be in a really nice area.
Amar's Music Show, pleased to know, has had another question asked. if you had a fans referendum to keep Scrap VAR, how would you vote? He said he'd vote to keep for two reasons. People forgot how awful decisions were pre-VAR. And I also don't understand how people can get mad at a video replay. The issue is the refs and the guidelines used to make decisions. My personal opinion is I would scrap it. I would keep goal line technology and I would keep automatic offsides. My bugbear is you're going to get decisions wrong. But when you're taking it to a video referee, he's got 4 minutes to slow it down in every single angle known to man and still get it wrong. That's where my problem is. I'd rather him just get it wrong to start with, and I can accept that.
If you have automated offsides, I would agree.
Yeah,
but
yeah, without offsides and goal on technology, things that aren't subjective.
Yeah, if you've got automated offsides, I'd get rid of it. If that wasn't an option, I would still keep it. But I think it is those officials. But I don't know if you saw the Joe Bellingham goal that got disallowed at the weekend.
Oh, shocker!
That's what, like, I thought if that was Wolves and like a last minute winner. And like you didn't have VAR, you'd be absolutely livid. So I think if you have got some sort of technology still for offsides, I think that's the key thing, really.
Yeah, you've got to only use it for black and white decisions, I feel. Like it's already proven it's not working. Like you say, the subjective decisions that, you know, you could show 10 people and everyone's going to have a different opinion on it. And I feel like VAR is giving referees on the pitch the ability to cop out and just give decisions and then feel like the mates will bail them out rather than going on what their gut feeling tells them. Mm-hmm. Start with. Got to get rid of it for me. In terms of get rid of the VAR, but keep the black and white ones.
Staff's Chris has asked, what's the best food that you only ever eat at Christmas that isn't pigs in blankets? Right question.
After eight's got to be up there for me, I think. I'm not a big fan. Like, to be fair, and this might sound a bit weird, I have a roast dinner pretty much every week, like weekend. So like anything, I'm not a big fan of turkey. Anything else on the roast dinner is what I would have every other week anyway, really. So it's got to be like the chocolate or whatever.
I don't have a roast every. I very rarely have a roast because I never find the time to do one. So I think for meats, not the roast, but more selection of meats. Because like Christmas Day, I like to do a bit of duck, and I might do a bit of beef with turkey or chicken. Oh, so just like beef. That bit of variation with the with the meats. I think. What about you, Jord?
So yeah, I'm the same as Dave. I tend to have like a roast dinner or close enough to a roast dinner pretty much every week. Even if it's just chicken wrapped in bacon, just to shove it in the air fryer and have, you know, all that sort of stuff. Like something that I always do at Christmas, or as a family, we always do at Christmas, which we would never do any part of the year, is get like mini sausage rolls, but like cook them yourselves in the oven. So I get like a big bag of frozen sausage rolls, put a bit of milk on the top of the pastry and just shove them in the oven. For me, that's like a Christmas treat, to be fair, that I don't normally have. So yeah, I'd go with that, to be fair.
We have as well, but it's normally a Boxing Day thing. We have like this like slow cooked ham. It's almost a bit like a gammon.
I was going to say, like a gammon joint as well. Very slow cooked gammon.
Unbelievable, man. And we normally have that on Boxing Day. And then there's loads left over. Have them on sandwiches up until about New Year.
Yeah. Stuffing and meat cobs up for the next 3 days.
Yeah.
All right, just your gaff stinks. Your arse is hanging out. before I move on to the career path games, I know that's why you're all stayed this long. I just want to give a shout out to Steve Bull, not for his goal scoring exploits, but I contacted the club recently. Lost my granddad, and obviously my dad's lost his dad, and my nan's lost her husband. Been poorly for quite some time, and it stopped my dad from going to the games, and obviously my nan's been feeling pretty shit and been married 65 years. And I spoke to the club and said, is there anything they can do? And we had a visit from Steve Bull last week. I'm sure you've seen it on my Twitter. But he come round for an hour, brought my nan some lovely flowers, and stayed and had a couple of coffees, and was just fantastic. And it definitely lifted the spirit. So, you know, little things like that. I know we criticise the club, and I certainly do, but little things like that go a long way. So thanks to Bully and the club and Wolves wishes. Really appreciated it. Right then, career path game. Are you ready? Are you ready, guys? Remember, if there's a 5-0 whitewash, someone's going...
Can I throw something out there, by the way? Surely Finns are going to have a TikTok dance for just career path game avoidance.
I don't think we'll ever see him in front of a camera again, to be honest, mate. So.
No, maybe not. It feels like a while.
It goes points per game anyway, and whoever finishes bottom at the end of the season is doing one. So...
Yeah, but Finn's actually not got a bad
We need Finn to play.
Well, Finn would be ahead of Jordan at the moment on points per game.
And that's a joke, especially after last week.
Right, are you ready?
Yep.
Let's go.
His internet seems quite good as well today. Your internet seems all right today, Jordan. So
no excuses.
Well. This player started his career at Celtic in 2005, making 0 appearances, scoring 0 goals. During his time at Celtic, he moved on loan to Dundee United in 2006, where he scored 2 in 13, before making a move to Wolverhampton Wanderers in 2006, making 6 appearances, scoring 0 goals. During his time at Wolves, he made a loan move to Southend United in 2008, scoring 1 in 18. He then moved to Aberdeen in 2008, where he stayed there for 2 years, scoring 9 in 72, before a big move to... a big move to Celtic in 2010, where he stayed there for 6 years, scoring 20 goals in 134 appearances, before he moved to Blackburn Rovers in 2016, scoring 27 in 100...
Charlie Mulgrew?
Oh, it's Charlie Mulgrew.
I didn't think he started at Celtic.
No, or me. I was getting confused. Ah.
Yeah, he played a lot for Celtic.
It was just the Blackburn thing then. That was...
man. Looks hesitated and you jumped in. Head's gone.
Ooh. I think we can have a whitewash on our hands. Dave just wants to do. Well, I've died. You ready?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This player started his career at Derby County in 1991, scoring 53 goals in 190 appearances. During his time at Derby, he went on loan to Torquay United in 1994, where he scored 5 in 10. He moved to Leicester City in 2001 and scored 6 in 22.
Dean Sturridge.
Oh, my word. He's on fire.
I was going to say Addy Akinboy, to be fair, so it's a good shout.
Billy Gold,
Jude.
I'm more pissed off that my record's not looking great.
It's not looking good, bro.
Just got to respect the opposition, Dave. You know, two good players.
You have. This player started his career at Chelsea in 2001, where he made 4 goals in 25 appearances. He moved on loan to Wolverhampton Wanderers in 2002, scoring 1 goal in 7.
Carlton Cole.
Oh, come on.
You purposely put fucking ones like George era today. I'm sure.
What do you mean, George era? He's only 15 years older than you.
15.
That's still a bit harsh.
That was a joke.
Oh, man. George on fire. Fuck.
Are you ready? I feel like Davey could get a bit of a comeback here.
Come on.
This player started his career at Cannes in 2002, scoring 2 goals in 96 before moving to Marseille in 2006, where he stayed there until 2009, scoring 2 in 72 before moving to Wolverhampton Wanderers in 2009, scoring 3 in 61. In 2013, he moved to Ajaccio, scoring 2 in 38 before moving to New York Red Bulls in 2015.
Ronald Zubar.
Oh, it's Ronald Zubar.
Come on.
George, come on.
Limash.
Well played, Dave. I had no idea then. Love Zubar as well.
Oh, my.
Zubar. That goal at West Ham.
Wow.
Belter.
The net. The sound of the net on that goal. Yeah.
Your final player, fifth and final player, started his career at Manchester United in 2015, scoring 0 goals in 10 appearances.
Cameron Borthwick-Jackson.
It's Cameron Borthwick-Jackson.
Oh, my fucking God.
I think that's the quickest we've had, I think.
That's ridiculous.
Thank you.
I think that's the quickest we've had. That is superb. Right. Dave, would like to update the scores.
So 18 to George. 14. He's George, every week.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the Zubar one was a great shout, to be fair. I wouldn't have got that, I don't think, unless... Well, I don't think I'd have got it because I sort of forgot even his career after the horse, to be fair. Cameron, that's just ridiculous, the Cameron Borthwick-Jackson one.
Ridiculous.
But to be fair, the Carlton Cole one, like, you only...
Charlie Mulgrew, I'm upset about. I wouldn't have got Sturridge.
I haven't kept a list of all the players that we've had, so we're going to have duplicates now and again. But that's fine, isn't it? Because I don't have a list. But I think I know. I don't think we've had any duplicates yet. I've been doing it for a few months. But
No.
Yeah, scores on the door so far after 7 games. Dave's on 18, George on 14, and Finney's on 3. if we are doing it on a points per game
basis. Doing the dance.
Yeah. How many? George
on 1.5 a game. He's getting.
I'm on 2 a game.
Yeah, George on 2 a game, and Dave's on what's that? 2.2,
something like that.
My match.
Finn would be on 10.5 on averages. So yeah, he's bottom.
That's where he's going to stay if he doesn't keep turning up. Yeah, hopefully we get him back on the next one because I do miss him. But yeah, any other business, lads, before we sign off?
No, I've just seen Johnny in the under-21s, mate. I saw, actually, there was an article today. I don't think it was a rumour as such, but Celta Vigo being touted for him to return there, I think. They got Benitez in charge.
Rafa.
So I think
they're after him last in the summer and Getafe.
Yeah, so he's gone. But yeah, I think this week, hopefully, we get some more transfer news popping up.
Fabio and Johnny on loan, do you reckon?
Yeah, I think both of them loan deals.
Deals. The door is still slightly ajar for Fabio, mate, for him to return.
Mate, give him a chance against West Ham. He scores a winner. It's a different narrative.
He's on the most underwhelming number 9 in Wolves' recent history.
I'd say recent. But are you talking like numbers as in the person who's got on the back of his shirt or just number 9?
Who have we had? We've had Raul. We've had Fabio. We've had...
Ebanks, Blake. Who was he after? Stephen Fletcher was 10, wasn't he?
Fletcher was 10, wasn't he? Yeah.
There's got to be a meme in there. Like, I'm searching Wolves number 9s very quickly.
Ebanks, Blake had it for a very long time, didn't he?
Wolves did a quiz. I'm just skipping it. I can't even skip it. I was going
to... We'll come back to our next week's pod.
Yeah.
If you can name some number 9s, I think it's... I've positioned that as being quite harsh, but I think
I've got one from back in the day, actually. Harvard Flow was a very...
I've got it, yeah. The number 9s, Nathan Blake, Sylvain Ebanks-Blake,
solid player,
Raul Jimenez, and then Fabio Silva. So there's not been that many, to be fair.
Really?
So between 2011 and 2012... Raul
had it after Ebanks.
Yeah, we did have a number 9 for like 6 years.
Leon Clark was number 9, wasn't he?
Maybe this is... So why is this... Why are we skipping eras here then? Oh, that's in the Premier League, sorry.
That's Premier League. That makes why reason why the 6.
Yeah, that's my bad.
That's all right. Dave, where can people find you? Should they wish to follow you?
At Dave as a party on Instagram and Twitter.
George?
Cheers, lads.
Yeah, so George was 7 on Twitter and Instagram.
When will the podcast be out next week, Dave? Because I'm not here. I'm in Edinburgh for the weekend, so I won't be around. But is it going to be a Monday night, a Tuesday release again? Or
might be Tuesday night for a Wednesday release. I've got a list, sorry, of the number nines very quickly. So we've got Fabio, obviously, now. Jimenez. Before Jimenez was Rafa Mir. Noah Dicko, Leon Ooh. Clark, Lee Griffiths, Ebanks Blake, Andy Keogh, Carl Court, Ganea, Nathan Blake, Adam Proudlock, and Kitzbeyer. They're all the ones since 2000.
Adam Proudlock was number nine.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, Fabio, you're not the most underwhelming.
Yeah. I'll probably I'm trying to think when he was number nine.
0102, apparently.
Yeah, because I think he was in the playoff final. I'm sure he was like number 30-something, wasn't he? Then again, Nathan Blake.
The number ones are good as well. You've got Jose Sarr, Carl Hakimi, John Flatt. I can't remember him ever getting the number one shot.
Not a number one. He's a coach now anyway, isn't
he? Yeah, yeah.
I sat next to him one of the games with the Budweiser. He was in one of those with the Budweiser seats.
Yeah.
It's
good.
Yeah, we are Talking Wolves across all social media platforms. And, of course, if you've enjoyed it, let us know. Like, subscribe, leave us a review if you're listening on Apple and Spotify. And until next time, hopefully we've got something a bit more positive to report back about. But, yeah, until next time, take it easy. I also saw someone said about the Maltese beer, Dave, in the comments.
There was a few comments.
There was
somebody who I reckon was of age that said he had the wild berries and it was gash. And by of age, I reckon he was like into his 40s plus. So using the word gash, I rate that.
Dave Dave has a party won that account, wasn't it? Trying to boost the engagement. Until next time, guys, take it easy and look after yourselves.